Exodus. Exodus. The going out. Most of us know about a little bit about the book of Exodus, and probably more than we think we do. So we'll get into that in a minute, and a couple minutes, and look at some highlights. I've not in this study in the past. Sometimes I've sought an outline for the book. This time in studying it, I'm looking at some of the highlights of the main message. Little background first, then the main message, and then some themes of the book. In other words, what's the book about? And that might help us. I know I studied up at Bethel with preacher was there at the time. I don't know. I don't think it was Brother Ball. I think it was preacher after him, and he had a lot of outlines, and we went through the whole Bible, and he had an outline for every book in the Bible, and sometimes you get something out of that, but for the most part, I think it's good to look at the message, and maybe we can remember the themes of a particular book. Romans 15, verse 4, to refresh our memories about why we studied the Old Testament. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. And also, if we look at 1 Corinthians 10, we'll find this information that's presented by the Apostle Paul as he writes to the church at Corinth to remind them of some of the things that happened in the past that, if they would call them to mind, would help them in the present. Chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, beginning verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not have that you would be ignorant, how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized by Moses in the cloud and the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual manna, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, these things were examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, neither be idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for ensamples or examples. And they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. So that would give us reason enough to study the Old Testament. Now, in our classes on Sunday morning, we're looking at the minor prophets. We're still on the background for those minor prophets, the 12 minor prophets. And we'll be looking at some of the others probably in a little bit more detail in the future. But this time, this go around, we're going to have a lesson or two, probably at the most two, on a book in the old, books in the Old Testament. We'll go to a point when somebody says stop, and we may go a little bit farther than them and stop. But anyway, I guess a lot of people must have had a lot of activities this afternoon or tonight because family and whatever, but I wish one of these days people would get over that, but they probably won't do it in our lifetime. Seems like more and more we get into these nasty habits, and that's what it is, a habit. Book of Exodus is a pivotal book. You have an outline. I have a little bit more information to put with the bone of the outline that I've handed, although it's fairly complete. But where we're going is some introductory material. Then we'll look at at the primary message, maybe some secondary messages, and then we'll look at some major themes in the book. But the book of Exodus is pivotal. It records the beginning of the national life of Israel. Sounds like an insurance company, doesn't it? These chosen of people of Israel who were God's chosen people relates to the circumstances and the content of the covenant that God made with Moses at Sinai. That's one of the key things that we'll find is in the book. The name of the book is derived, I'm told, from the Septuagint or the Greek Old Testament, and it means a going out. A going out. I think I've mentioned before that when the Old Testament was written, it was written in Hebrew, and in I don't know what year, but close to the first century, not far before the first century, or along about that time, someone did translate it into Greek, because that was the common language of the day. So they had that available in the first century. It means going out, and we can see where it gets its name, Exodus. And the name is still used by the people of Israel. We can see the Jews referring to this name because it has to do with one of the greatest national events of their history, when the people of God, the chosen of God, left Egypt and exited on their way to the promised land. And it shows Exodus is a link between the story of mankind in creation and through the lineage of Abraham as begun in the book of Genesis. And we continue to follow the lineage of the descendants of Abraham through the descendants of Jacob, whose name meant supplanter, and changed his name to Israel, and his 12 sons who went down into Egypt. The book of Exodus talks about the fact that God, and lets us know that, let them know that God was fulfilling his promise that was made to Abraham, and I'm sure they recalled that promise laid, set down through the years. They were in Egypt about 430 years, so quite a bit of time had passed, and yet in the overall history of mankind, wasn't a monstrous amount of time. But in Genesis chapter 12, Abraham was promised the land of Canaan, that his people, his descendants, would be a great nation, that they would have a land of Canaan, and that there was a seed promise through Abraham, that through his seed all nations of the earth be blessed. Galatians 3:16 says that seed was Christ. It shows how God, in the book of Exodus, shows how God raised up Moses to deliver his people, Israel, from their 400 years of bondage under the Egyptians. It relates the Passover to us and its significance, points to Jesus, God's sacrificial lamb. Isaiah speaks of that at length in Isaiah 53. And it contains the law given by God through Moses. We call it the law of Moses. It's really, I suppose it was called Moses' law, but it was really God's law given to Moses, who was God's prophet. The law contained more than spiritual guidance. So, here was a nation of about 2 to 3 million people. And they needed guidance in more than their spiritual lives, because they were going to become truly a nation, not just a group of believers in God, but a nation who needed civil laws. civil duties and civil obligations and responsibilities. This covered the period of time, the book of Exodus, from the death of Joseph to the building of the tabernacle. So there's a pretty long period of time. Death of Joseph is told about in the last chapter of Genesis, which is chapter 49. And I have that verse a little bit later on. Book of Exodus has 40 chapters after Genesis begins with 50. What about the message? You got that next in your outline, the message of the book of Exodus. Primary message is one of redemption. You might say, well, how did that get in the picture? Well, when you think about the way that God went about saving Egypt, saving his people from the land of Egypt, you see a tie-in to Christ, and we'll get to that a little bit more later. The children of Israel, though, found themselves in Egypt, and how did they find themselves down there? Well, Joseph's brothers would say they did it. God would say differently, wouldn't he? It was through God's providence that Joseph wound up in Egypt at an opportune time for God's people, for the continued existence and well-being of God's people. Joseph's brothers, you remember, hated Joseph. Why did they hate Joseph? Because their daddy loved Joseph so much. He favored him. And especially that hideous-looking coat of many colors that he wore. I would imagine they used that word with many other words about that coat that brother Joseph got from their daddy. I think he got it through his daddy. But Joseph went down in Egypt, sold by his brother to a band of Ishmaelites that were going that way, and they sold him to Potiphar, who was an officer in the Egyptian kingdom, to the Pharaoh. And later we find that Joseph is in prison due to some lies made by Potiphar's wife and a missing coat. In prison, he interprets some dreams. Then the Pharaoh had some dreams about some fat years and lean years. That's what they ultimately were interpreted. He saw cows and corn. But those dreams were interpreted to mean that there were going to be some years in which they had plenty, followed by years in which they had little. And the Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of taking care of that storage of the food stuff. He was the commissioner of agriculture or something like. But he was second in command, second to Pharaoh. Now Joseph died at age 110. I've got the verse now, Genesis 50 and verse 26, not 49, like I said. At age 110, he told the people that were living at that time of his descendants that they carry his bones back into the land of Canaan. And so that one way that they'd remember they were going to go into the land of Canaan at some time, because they had to pass that down through the years that they were in Egypt. But trouble began. I don't know how long after Joseph dies, but in Exodus 1 and 8, we have this statement made by Moses as he writes the book. Now there rose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. It wasn't, it just didn't know his name, I would assume. He didn't know that probably certain promises were made to him and to the family, that they would be given the particular land that they were in and allowed to coexist along with the other Egyptian people. But this phrase, which knew not Joseph, he saw also, this Pharaoh did, that the people were multiplying. I mean, their population was really, something like the Hispanic population here in this country, coming to begin to be a second minority in our country. And at that time, there were maybe 2 to 3 million Israelites in the land of Egypt. Now, that would give a king some problem. Because these people he would see as having allegiance to a god that wasn't an Egyptian god, or at least having some allegiance. Also, the Pharaoh himself considered himself somewhat of a god, requiring people to worship him, similar to the way the Caesars did at a later time in Rome. Taskmasters were put over the people. They were little more than slaves for a great number of years. Exodus 1:14 kind of gives us a description of what happened. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. They put these people to work for them. And very difficult, I'm sure, just being under other people when they had their freedom prior to them. The people of Israel continued to multiply, so the population continued to increase, which caused Pharaoh to make a drastic decision. He decided he's going to tell these midwives to kill all the male babies born among the Jews. And so they were told to do so. Moses was a fair child. I think that's the King James way of putting it. And by hook or crook, he was saved by being placed in an ark by his family. And Pharaoh's daughter saw him down there among the bulrushes. It's the right ark I've got him in, right, Moses? And she wanted that baby taken care of. And so happens that Moses' mother was chosen to take care of him, and she raised him, raised in Pharaoh's household, and stayed there for 40 years, I believe it was, until he had some problems. We won't go into those. So, but Exodus traces the history of Israel as it grows to a great nation. As far as size is concerned, 2 or 3 million people. Because once they got on the road and started numbering them later, they numbered about 600,000 fighting men, which would suggest that they were likely, along with the women and the children, and those men that couldn't fight, could be as many as 2 or 3 million. That's what's been estimated. You can imagine 2 or 3 million people on the march. Those people caused difficulty in Egypt. They caused difficulty wherever they went. I would imagine if in Lula Moore's Western books that 15 or 20 Indians would raise up a dust, as you can see, I would imagine 2 million people, you know that they were nearby if you were in the land of Canaan. It didn't matter that the spies went in and said, you know, there are giants in the land. There were 2 million people or so outside the land, among whom were 600,000 individuals evidently trained as soldiers. So we see God's faithfulness to the promise of Canaan to the descendants of Abraham being carried out eventually. God shows that he's in control of the nations, sets the stage also, as far as the book of Exodus is concerned, for our understanding how God is to work his redemptive purpose through Christ. When we see Moses, we see Jesus. Jesus was a prophet like unto Moses. Moses said that in Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 and following, that God would raise up a prophet like unto him. But also, Jesus delivers his people from bondage, just in the bondage of sin, just as Moses delivered the people of Israel from the Egyptians. God had him do that. And we talk about the Passover lamb. Like the Passover lamb, Jesus was sacrificed with the purpose of sparing the lives, sparing people from death, eternal death. And like Aaron, Jesus is our high priest. So those things we see going through. Major themes, 3, the Passover in Exodus chapter 12. Pharaoh's refusal to let God's people go, God sent 10 plagues. I won't ask you to name them at this time. I don't think I could name them. I could name most of them because I've read some of the, I've read most of Exodus 12 or much of Exodus 12. But the river, remember, the water was turned to blood. There were frogs and lice, you name it. Flies, murrain of cattle, boils, hails, fires, locusts, darkness. That's supposed to be about 9. And to the theme, let God's people go, he said, no go, as far as Pharaoh was concerned. God said, I got one final thing, and I believe it will turn the tide. And it was the death of the firstborn. Every family in Egypt. It included the cattle, too, I think. We're going to die, the firstborn. And this would be a blow at Pharaoh himself. All the others were blows and power thrust toward the Egyptians' false gods. They had gods of the river, the frogs, lice, flies, cattle, hail, locusts, darkness, whatever. They had gods that represented something that related to that. So the final plague was a blow at Pharaoh himself because he wanted to be worshipped. God provided a means by which the Israelites could escape this death of the firstborn by being passed over. They had to sacrifice a one-year-old unblemished male lamb, put blood over the lintels, the top of the doorpost, and God would pass over that household. And they would eat that lamb, that roasted, roast that lamb and eat it, and eat the flesh of it, and unleavened bread along with that, and bitter herbs, the Bible says. And then they dressed themselves ready for travel. They were ready to leave. And the Israelites depart Egypt by night. God has a pillar of fire to guide them, Exodus 13:21. So the Passover, the feast of unleavened bread, was observed by Israel together from then on to remember the Exodus. And still, that's what Passover is today. Now, I don't know if those who celebrate Passover sometimes probably don't understand what it is, especially if they're not Jews. Why they would celebrate it, I don't know. I guess you can, because these were God's people, that there might be some reason to at least hold that day as being a day to remember what God has done for his people in the past. Despite the Jews' refusal to recognize Jesus as the Messiah, even to this day. Passover is important to our study today. I give you 2 scriptures from the New Testament that suggest that. When John saw Jesus at the distance, he said, behold, the Lamb of God. And what is that? Taketh away the sins of the world. The Lamb and sin. The Lamb back in their day, death of the firstborn. Death of sin, death of the firstborn, and all related to the Lamb. 1 Corinthians 5:7, for even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. 1 Corinthians 5:7. Second theme, the law, God's covenant with Israel. We won't read all these scriptures. Got some scriptures down for you, but Moses and the people were at Sinai for about a year where they received the law. And I suppose they had to learn something about the law. I mean, you weren't going to obey it unless you knew what it was. Not only the spiritual law, but the civil laws that were also enacted. There were health laws, different types of laws that were involved to keep these people within the care of God and have a united effort for them in whatever they did. 10 commandments were given to state their fundamental duties to God and man. If you look at the first of the 4 commandments in Exodus 20, verses 1 through 17, the first 4 have to do with their relationship with God. The next six have to do with their relationship with man. In the New Testament, Jesus summed them up. Somebody asked him, what's the greatest commandment? He said, a great commandment is to love God. And then he said, to love thy neighbor as thyself. So we gave these two and he summed it all up. And that can sum up the 10 commandments. Verse 4, love God with all your might. And the last six, love your neighbor. You won't steal. You won't lie. You won't commit fornication. Everyone else is your neighbor. You won't covet. You won't do these other things. Covet was temporary and it was typical. We've had the word type come up in the book of Hebrews. Now, I've got a definition of type. I don't know whether I've ever run across a definition before, but somewhere in this study I ran across it. A type is a person, institution, or event of the Hebrew religion. Okay? So there's a person, there's some type of institution or some kind of event back in the time of God's people under the law of Moses, which anticipates a person, an institution, or event in the Christian system, or in Christianity, in the Christian religion. Listen to Hebrews 10, verse 1. I think I got it in your notes, too. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things. What that's saying is, the law, when you look at your shadow, that's not, somebody sees your shadow, they may know you're coming, but you're not there yet. If they can read what that shadow means, they might figure out where you are. But the shadow is not you. Shadow is not reality. Shadow is an indication of that reality is there or reality is coming. But the law having a shadow of good things to come, in other words, it gave an idea of what was come. And then when that which came in the first century that related to that shadow or that type back in the Old Testament, then we had reality or the real thing. Basic principles that were embodied by the law, such as worship and such as the permanence of marriage, really are eternal principles of God. Probably to some extent existed, well, not to some extent, existed before the law, really. But then the Sabbath, the animal sacrifices, the ceremonial things of the law, even, of course, keeping the Sabbath, been superseded. Superseded by the gospel of Jesus Christ. Jesus said he fulfilled the law. The book of Hebrews indicates that the law had been replaced, that it decayed, it had been destroyed, that it was done away with. And so it was replaced by the law of Christ. Third theme discussed in the book is the tabernacle. We're not going to go into much detail of the tabernacle because I don't know a whole lot about it. I got a book about that thick somewhere at home. The title of it is The Tabernacle. Exodus 25 through 40 is a good book on the tabernacle too. Gives you all kind of details. Jerry had been studying it not too long ago and he went into a little bit of detail as they were studying it. But it's very difficult to remember those things, but we need to remember some things about it, just have it in our mind. Number one, it was also called the Tent of Meeting, Tabernacle of Testimony. I think I've got some verses where that's mentioned, and according to the translation you have is what it's called. The called the tabernacle in Exodus 25 and 9. It symbolized God's presence with the people. It was a focal point and center for worship for God's people, as was the synagogue. And I don't know when the synagogue came up. It came up during those 400 silent years, I think, between Malachi and in the book of Matthew, because the synagogue, I don't believe, was in existence, as far as I recall, in the Old Testament. They had the tabernacle that they would move from place to place, and then they got up their own places of worship according to where the people were located. Then the temple was built. The tabernacle was originally built at Sinai. They carried it through the years of the wilderness. I bet that thing was kind of worn out, but it was built strong to start with. They used exactly what God told them to use, size-wise, length, dimensions, all the dimensions, type material. It was preserved. If you read 1 Kings 8, 4, 9, it was preserved, at least portions of it, as a relic for some time and kept in the temple, I believe it was. The tabernacle was composed of the holy place and the most holy place, or holy of holies. In the holy place, a golden lampstand, table of showbread, altar of incense, holy of holies was the Ark of the Covenant, which later we know that at least the Ten Commandments, the stones there were, for the Ten Commandments were there. Again, the tabernacle was the center of worship for God's people at that time. Book of Exodus, going out. That's what it means, book going out. Genesis meant the beginning. Connecting link between man's early history, as evidenced in the book of Genesis, and it's the continuing saga of what will Abraham's people do next. So, it's a continuing saga of God's people as they go from the time of creation and go to the time of the wilderness, wandering on their way to the land of Canaan. There's some overlapping in some of these books that we'll be getting into. At the beginning of God's Mosaic Covenant with his chosen people Israel, through whom the Messiah was to come. So there are little things in there mentioned from time to time, especially in the Old New Testament, that relate back to the book of Exodus. Primary message, God's redemption of his people through Moses, of course, which was kind of like a type of the redemption of God's people by Jesus Christ. From bondage into and in the promised land to come. Major themes, the Passover, the law, and the tabernacle. Thus we have a brief review of the book of Exodus. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. We're going to the book of Leviticus next week. And some of these books, the Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, especially Numbers, we'll see what we have to say on those, but we're using some help. Rubel Shelley has he doesn't stay on all subjects, but he's got some good outlines of all the Old Testament books and all the New Testament books, and also Brother Hopper gave a study on the Bible to the congregation, and we have that. I have that copy of that study, and I'm using those two books to get the information. In addition to my reading of pertinent scriptures on this. We appreciate you being here, though we are very sparse tonight, even sparser than usually on Sunday night. We're grateful that you're here, and we trust that these studies will strengthen your faith. See how God dealt with his people in the past. How God keeps his promises, and God has made promises to us. We have the same God. That God, even though it looks like at times this country and other countries in the world are out of control totally, God is in control of the nations. We're in control of those individual circumstances around us. And the hardest thing for us to do is that's usually the limit to our control. But since we have a Father in heaven, Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit, we have one who controls everything. So we really have more control than we let on like we do. If there's one here not a Christian, I think each one here is. If you need to respond to the gospel in any way tonight, if you need our prayers on your behalf or desire to rededicate your life to Christ, if you have any need like that tonight, you have an opportune time to come as we stand and sing. Here it leads us.